The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things. Hello. Welcome to Exposing the Masters Within, the one and only hour on radio or the internet dedicated solely to helping you expose yourself. My name is John Schulte. I'm here to serve you, to help you to know more of the truth about you. It's often said, looks can be deceiving. And we all know that the surface of things is, by definition, shallow. So thanks for joining me today as we journey through the looking glass to explore what's on the other side, to explore what's beneath the surface. We're here together to discover, uncover, and recover our masters within. You knew your mastery much more fully when you signed up for your on-earth sojourn. But you mostly forgot it soon after leaving the cozy confines of your mother's womb. You've rediscovered some inkling of it, or you wouldn't be listening to me now. So, it's time to remember the masters we are. It's time to reclaim the power we have. It's time for Exposing the Masters Within. Let's get started.
Today is Sunday, February 12th, 2012. 212, 212. For those of you in the numerological viewpoint, welcome everyone. And surprise, surprise. Let's start out by connecting. And as always, let's take that connection inward first. The most important connection we have to make is into our own divinity. So let's open up those doors, open them wide, and let your divinity come out. And just breathe that up, breathe it out, breathe it in, whatever direction feels right to you, to let yourself feel more of your power, more of your mastery. Because that's the starting point for exposing it, for sharing it. We have to connect with it first more fully, connect with it, connect with ourselves, our divinity, our true essence more fully if we're going to be able to expose it, if we're going to be able to share it, if we're going to be able to live through that energy and allow that energy to live through us in our lives. So that's the place to start. And then where are we living? We're living on planet Earth. So let's connect down into our Mother Earth, again, in whatever way works best for you, but opening up to receive the energy flow that comes from her, that love, that energy of support that's there, and just let that fill you up. Let it expand in your experience. Let it increase your sense of place, and with that, your sense of safety. Because we all belong exactly where we're at. And we're all in body on planet Earth at this time for multiple reasons that we're probably not going to know fully until we're not in body any longer, till we're doing that review at the end, going over our Akashic notes and looking at all the things that we experienced while we were here. But the best way to be here is to be as present as possible, to get as much out of every moment, no matter what the moment might bring. So the best way to do that is to be as fully present in our body and in connection with Mother Earth as possible. And then let's expand it out to the rest of divinity, up to our angels and guides, the ascended masters and other teachers that we might have, our spiritual mentors who are here supporting us all the time, but unfortunately who most of us don't connect with nearly all of the time. So again, just about opening up to allow awareness of that connection that is always there, as the connection with the earth is always there, as the connection with our divinity is always there. What's not always there is our openness to be aware, to feel those connections. And so making that conscious choice each time we do helps to open up the pathways more fully, so that even when we're not consciously thinking about our connection to divinity, we can have a greater awareness of it, a greater experience of it. So that's kind of exposing the masters out there to ourselves, not to anyone else. All right, so let's expand out to those other masters in training, masters on earth, masters in body, all the others who are listening to the show here today and who are listening to the show through the recording. Just consciously choose to open up the connections there to this group of fellow travelers, of fellow expanders. For each of us who is walking this path is connected. Each of us who's not walking the path is directly connected, but those of us walking the path are a much greater support to each of us than those who are not walking a path of conscious awareness. We are creating a momentum. And so this is about opening into feeling that momentum, feeling that energy, feeling that flow. And just let yourself breathe into that and feel again another level of support. We are so supported, but we're not always aware of that. And for many of us, we're not often aware of it. But this is a time to let that awareness expand. Even when we're not thinking about each other, by the very fact that we come together to create this community, that we come together to create the flow that will be shared here today, means that we're connected even when we're not consciously in this flow, consciously co-creating together. And we can tap into that support and that mutual intention. So let that expand right now, as fully as you're able. And one last level. Let's take that expansion out even further. Beyond the community of those who will listen to this show either live or through the recording, to all the others who are walking a path of empowerment on planet Earth right now, who are creating that mass consciousness of awakening that is taking place. And again, allow yourself to open to feel that energy of support, that momentum moving forward to the greatest degree that you can at this time. And just allow that to feed you as we step forward into today's experience. I don't know if there's a standard yet for what the experience is going to be for one of these shows, but I'm going to do something I don't believe I've done yet previously. I'm going to start by talking about a book. And it's a book that I just got this week. I'm not finished with it, but so I'm not going to go into everything about the book, but I am going to go into a few things about it because it brought up for me huge pieces related to that energy of perception and how much our perception, including our beliefs, including our past experiences, filters our reality. And so let me just touch in a little bit on the book itself. The book is called Sex at Dawn, and it is a book about Well, the history of sexuality, the untold history of sexuality, the distorted history of sexuality from before, well, history. And there's a whole lot that it goes into and a whole lot that it debunks about how we view history versus what happened before history, so to speak, what happened before the historical record. But one of the biggest things that it's touching on is what I would call, what they might call, I don't know how they called it in the book if they did, but it's perception bias. In other words, we have built-in filters of what we believe. And when we are looking at the world at large, we see what we think we're going to see. And that is huge in all of our experiences. And that, for me, is one of the biggest things that I'm trying to do for myself and trying to do with those that I work with, is to help see some of what those filters are so we can choose either to set them aside or to make them conscious, to accept that, well, I really do believe that this is the way the world works, and so I'm going to use this as how I, as a way that I look at the world, as a tool to look at the world through, so to speak, as a lens to look at the world through, or, wow, I didn't realize I was looking at it through that filter, and I don't like that filter, so I'm going to set that filter aside and see if I can't get a clearer view of what's actually going on. And in many ways, that's exactly what I'm seeking to do with the radio show as well, is first for myself, and then, of course, with and for each of you who are co-creating it with me, to offer perspectives that can help to shift some of those filters. First, to see them more clearly. If we don't even know that they're there, we look through them. And they're kind of like sunglasses. They color the world out there. And if we're not aware that we're looking through sunglasses, then we don't have the awareness that that color of the tint is affecting what we're actually seeing. And I have to say, I cannot recommend this book highly enough. I'm not finished with it, but if you want something that it's far from just about sexuality. For those of you who are wide readers or maybe very narrow readers in certain ways, if you've ever read any of the books of Stephen Jay Gould or Lewis Thomas, who are other writers who take on scientific topics or topics about the natural world and make them not only easily understandable, but also fun. These guys are fun. I don't often laugh out loud reading books, especially nonfiction, but with this book I am. So, again, the title is Sex at Dawn, if you're interested. I would suggest it, again, not just for the topic of sexuality, but for paradigm busting in general, because I've already had a number of biases that I just bought into because that's what I was told in school. That's what I gathered from the available data of whatever I might have read, wherever I might have read it, whatever I heard, because it was the accepted consensus. Well, the accepted consensus is not always right. And in fact, much of the accepted consensus is, if not demonstrably wrong, then it still doesn't seem to make sense. So, anyway, this book has the capacity to shake things up. Now, one of the things that they talk about, one of the things that they're going to, is looking at what we in our civilized veneer would call primitive societies. One term commonly used is hunter-gatherers. They often are using the term foragers in this book. And they want to distinguish between those hunter-gatherers who also had some farming, maybe not intensive, but some farming and some animal husbandry, kept chickens or whatever. Anyway, so they look at those groups, and there are still groups like that in various out-of-the-way places on the planet right now. And again, a lot of what they talk about has to do with sexuality, but they touch in on a lot of other assumptions that we make about what the world was like back then. And one of them, which I found just fascinating, had to do with this idea, and I believe it was Thomas Hobbes. Don't quote me on that. It's in the book. Who basically put forth an idea that before agriculture, everything was suffering. There was ongoing continuous war. There was extreme poverty. People were likely to die all the time. It was a constant struggle for survival, blah, 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 blah. Well, one of the things that they touch in on, and from the way they go through it, it makes sense to me. It definitely resonates. Again, use your resonance, use your discernment to know what's true for you, no matter what the source, including this source in this radio show. But one of the things they touch on is this idea that most of us in our culture are living with, and many of us walking this path consciously are seeking to overcome, which is a built-in bias that basically says there's not enough to go around, that we live in a world of lack. And I know that's been part of my path, and God knows that's a huge part of the path of some of that, those filters to be overcome and shed by so many walking the spiritual path, because especially spirituality got tied in very tightly with that through vows of poverty, through, shall we say, the spiritual beggars who go around the world, and they, again, especially I guess in India is one place where this happens a lot, where they survive through begging, but it's about getting that spiritual connection. But in this book, they stand that idea on its head. And in going and talking to those communities of foragers, those tribes, those small groups, they live in a very abundant world. Now let's, again, I may be giving incorrect answers or incorrect data here, or incomplete. So I realize that I am paraphrasing here, and I'm probably getting the numbers wrong. But what they talk about in these communities is that they typically are spending less than 2 hours a day. Well, let me adjust that. Less than 3 hours a day doing all the work that they're going to do for that day, including all the food gathering, all of the preparation that might take place for preparing that food in any way, gathering wood, creating a fire, etc. And that the rest of their time is spent in what we might term leisure. They're not out there trying to make another buck. They're telling stories. They're taking naps. I find that fascinating, that napping, and it doesn't diminish their sleep at night, but napping is a very, very prominent part of many of these communities. And those social interactions. And that they live in a very tight-knit community because they are much more sharing in what they bring back. If someone goes out and hunts and has a successful hunt, they're going to bring that food back and everyone in the community shares in it. It's not this hoarding mentality that so much of the Western world and so much of the industrialized and desiring to be industrialized world has. Where do I sign up? Can you imagine? Can you imagine your life like that? Where you were not stressed about paying bills, where you are not stressed about, your work, where it was easy. They believe the world is abundant. They can go out and gather all the food that they need, all the other things that they need, the firewood, what they use for clothing or shelter, very easily. They live in a world of abundance that many of us on this spiritual path are still trying to come to grips with, let alone live. I mean, I stated, and I've heard it in lots of channeling sessions, this is an infinite universe, and it's even an infinite planet. And the idea that's embedded in so much of lack consciousness, that in order for me to be abundant, I must take away from someone else because there's not enough to go around. Someone's going to have to suffer. That's embedded in it. And so we have these, it's better to give than to receive kinds of things, where we're trying to force ourselves to be generous, where we're trying to force ourselves to give to others. But it's because we're in this hoarding mentality. And that's fascinating to me. And I'm still digesting it. And hopefully will be for quite some time, to shift that at an energetic level, to get back to what it would feel like to live in that kind of community. Again, they share. And not sharing is actually shameful. It's not about ostentation. It's not about having more than anyone else. It's not about keeping up with the Joneses, but about keeping the Joneses up with you. Because if you have more than they do, then you're doing something wrong. That's a radical shift from how much of our culture is living. Not necessarily how much of us are desiring to live, but certainly how much of our culture is actually living. And for me, there's just a great amount of freedom in it. Now, obviously, I can't go off and just join one of these groups and become a hunter-gatherer. Things have definitely gotten to where they are for purpose, and I don't know the big picture of what that purpose might be. I really don't. One thing that does come to mind, which may be part of the picture, in those communities, there is much less attachment to standing out. There's much less desire to stand out. You want to be part of the community. In many of them, all the women are called mother and all the men are called father to every child. And so that idea that, was it Hillary Clinton talked about, takes a village to raise a child, that's what they live. Wow. What would that be like? What would that be like? So anyway, like I say, lots of other things touched upon in there that I'm not going to go in at this point, but it really brought that idea up of what are those filters. And so what that brought to mind is the next thing that I'd like to touch in upon, which is what some of those filters are. And quite a while ago, I taught a class. Need to break this class out again and teach it again, but I'm going to touch in on some of it here. Taught a class called Your Soul Contract. And as I was receiving this and as it was coming through, there were lots of things that were not what might typically be presented by most people talking about soul contracts, and especially how most people might talk about it specifically in relation to karma. But I've never been one to go along with the crowd, at least mentally. A lot of my life I did that personally, behaviorally, but not mentally. I lived in my own little world there. And so I don't agree with what a lot of other stuff is that's out there about soul contracts and karma. Some of this I've already touched on in other radio shows, so I'm not going to go into all of it in depth. Don't have enough time anyway. But a couple things I do want to touch in on here. The first one is the concept that this life is a continuation of the last one, of your past life, your most recent past life. You got to wherever you got, and in spiritual terms, if you were in sixth grade then and you had mastered English and reading, but you needed some work in science and math, then where you're going to start in this life is in at the sixth grade level, and you've got English and reading in a pretty good shape, and you need work with math and science. And so those are going to be the issues you're going to work on here. And it's this linear progression from one life to the next, and we don't have choice in the matter. I don't buy that one bit. But that's the way many people look at what karma is. Your past life is creating the circumstances in this life. And I understand why that's the belief system, you know, because that explains why things can suck in this life. I screwed up in the last one. I didn't do it right then. There is a degree of punishment taking place here. I've got to make up for something like that. That aspect of karma. For me, the aspect of karma that is, as you reap, so shall you sow. Or wait a minute. That's opposite. As you sow, so shall you reap. Is within this lifetime. I don't buy that it carries over from one lifetime to another. That doesn't make sense to me. What makes sense to me is that as souls, we are in a much greater degree of choice. And so when we're coming in here, we are choosing in the same way that we choose our parents. That's actually widely accepted among those on the path, not out in the world in general, but it's fairly widely accepted among most people on this path that we've chosen our parents, which means we've chosen those basic circumstances of our life, where we're going to be born, what kind of religious upbringing we might get, what kind of education we're going to get, what kind of socioeconomic status we're going to have, etc. And we've chosen those things. And we've chosen some of the basic underlying patterns that we're going to learn. In the same way, a lot of those patterns we get passed on directly to us through the DNA of our parents, but by our choice. And I would describe DNA as an interface between our physical reality and our energetic reality. In other words, it's about taking the energetic patterns and helping them to play out in these dimensions that we are experiencing life through, physically, emotionally, mentally. And so by choosing our parents, we are choosing literally many of the energetic patterns that we're going to live because they are encoded in the DNA. That's how we get them and how they express, or at least a piece of how they express. As with most things spiritual, we can only simplify and estimate. We don't have the language capacity or probably the mental capacity to get the whole picture. I know I don't. Anyway, so what does that mean? Well, for me, those things that we're choosing, and I again, I know it's my belief, and most people would disagree with me out there, we're choosing those patterns, we're choosing those experiences, that is our soul contract. And karma itself is the energetic patterning. So what we start with karmically are the patterns that we've chosen based upon the circumstances we've chosen. Well, I would say by extension, and this gets back to where I was talking with the book, by extension, what we are choosing are not only those patterns, but the filters that are embedded in those patterns. Easiest example of all. there are certain experiences that are intrinsic to being a man or being male that are not intrinsic to being a female. Simply the biology is different. Certain experiences, in the same way that being in a man's body this lifetime, I'm not going to get pregnant and give birth. There's no way I can know that. Well, that creates a different filter. It creates a different viewpoint on the world. Now, the psychologist can argue about what that means, what the actual filter might be in a larger universal sense. But for me, what's important right now is not about the larger universal, what it means to be the universal generic male versus the universal generic female. And I'm not putting this out to postulate the war of the sexes. What I am saying is that there are certain things that men are going to filter in certain ways based on how we're built. And there are certain things that women are going to filter in certain ways because they are women. Now, I'm not saying that as a man I need to ignore all of that. But what I am saying is that the more I can become aware of what those filter biases are, the less I am going to be limited in my experience. Again, I am not in this body in this lifetime going to give birth. I'm never going to be pregnant. So I will never have that filter. Never have those experiences to shape how I look at the world. But that doesn't mean I need to be in that most limited version of what it means to be male. So much of what it means to be male is not just physiologically defined. Okay, we have penises, we have testicles, we have reproductive organs outside the body. Women have ovaries and vaginas and the things inside, etc. But they're culturally defined. What it means to be an empowered male or a dominant male or a successful male in Eastern white North America, in New Hampshire, one of the whitest states in the Union, versus what it means to be a successful male in Latino Los Angeles or San Diego or Mexico are very different, even though we have the same general physiology. And the same can be again applied to the variations that are true for women. And again, those are filters, and we're born into those filters. So again, another basic filter is going to be of race. Another basic filter is going to be of religion or the lack thereof. Another basic filter is going to be education. Not only the type of education, but the actual education. Someone going to an Ivy League school versus a community college in a small town, they're going to have very different experiences. Even if they learn some of the same mental knowledge, the experiential is going to be very different. And the view on the world is going to be very different. And many of these filters overlap each other. They're built in together. What class someone is in economically is going to determine, to some degree, where they live, which is going to determine the kind of education they get, which is going to determine some of those beliefs about the world and what's possible, etc. And so what can we do about this? Well, first thing, and try this right now, if you like, or try it later, if you'd rather, or don't try it at all, your choice, would be to just jot down some of those basic attributes And we can look at them as ways that we define ourselves. You know, if I'm going to do that, well, a few of the obvious ones. I'm male. I'm now in my 40s. I was raised Roman Catholic, 12 years of Catholic education, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, one in education in English, one in theater. Let's see what else. Socioeconomic status. Over the course of my life, moving from probably upper lower class, lower middle class to middle class. What else? Well, continuing education in massage school. Self-employment for the great majority of my adult life, teaching in the educational system at the junior high and high school level and at the university level. All of these are experiences that I've had, ways that I've defined myself, ways that have filtered my perceptions of the world that have brought me to where I am now, but that are also still here affecting my worldview and keeping me inside certain boxes. Now, my box is a lot bigger than a lot of people's, but that doesn't mean it's anywhere near as large as I'd like it to be, which is why I love reading books like this one that I was talking about, because they help me to see the edges of my box so that I can peer over the top and expand it. I know I've talked earlier about, on another show, other shows, in fact, about the concept of wiggle room, and that we have certain things that we know to be true, and that is at all levels. We have that about at the mental level, we have it at the emotional level, and we have it at the physical level. We have certain things that we know to be true. They are universal truth to us. They're not necessarily universal truth, but they are our experience that has been proven by the experiences we've had. We have those concepts in the wiggle room, which we are entertaining. We think they might have some value, but we're not sure yet. We don't know about the resonance. We don't maybe have the experiential to back it up yet, etc. And then we have those things that are simply beyond what we can find acceptable. And oftentimes, what I find is these paradigm breakers, like this book, are the things at the very edge of my wiggle room and perhaps even partly in the incomprehensible, unacceptable part. Because that's where the wiggle room expands, and that's where we literally are able to begin shedding those filters. If we're not even aware of the filters there, we can't make the change. And so, well, I started an exercise a moment ago. I said, try this, and then I rambled on. Let's go back to the exercise. It starts with just taking a look at some of those attributes, some of those definitions, some of those filters that we have. Start with gender, start with education, with religion. For me, both of my parents are still alive, and they have been married. They were married throughout my lifetime. That's a very different filter than those children who lived in single family homes or were adopted or lived in a home where while they were children, the divorce took place, or even when a divorce took place after they were adults, etc. All of these things are filters, and they color how we look at the world. And they limit it. They limit it. And so, for instance, one way to work with this is to take one of these. Again, let's just start with the most basic one, the most obvious one. In most cases, transsexuals will screw this whole curve up, if you will. That of gender. The most basic thing, when people don't even feel like they're the right gender in their body, what kind of a reality would that be to live in? Where you felt like your basic biology was incorrect. Talk about feeling betrayed by even being alive. What kind of a filter would that put on the world out there? All right. So back to the exercise. And it starts with just the mental exercise of asking yourself perhaps this question. What are possible ways in which my being male or female, whichever you might be, are filtering my perception of the world at large? And just jot down what comes to mind. What you think you know about gender differences, what you think you know about male versus female expectations, etc. And it's not that you're looking for the right answer or that there even is a right answer. What you're looking for is to just notice the edges of your filter. You're seeking to bring to conscious awareness more of these unconscious things that we walk around with. So you're aware that, oh, well, I'm wearing blue sunglasses in relation to gender, and I'm wearing red sunglasses in relation to religion, and I'm wearing these sunglasses in relation to that, et cetera, et cetera. Why? Because it allows you to make choices then. And so the next thing, when you have that list, the next thing that you can do with that to explore it is to ask another very simple question. Well, or even a couple of very simple questions. One of them might be, is this true? Is it true that because I'm a male, I'm more aggressive? I don't know. Is there any way to know that that's true? Or is that part of the filter that we look out at the world at, that we have as an expectation? I'll give you another example. Another one of the filters that I have that has invaded my life, got me on the path. I don't want it to go away. I've spoken of it before, but it's about being molested. Well, for me, part of what that did is it put a filter into me about, I guess the best way to describe it is that of, because I'm a male, I was born to abuse others. That was the filter that I took on through having that experience. And it took me a long time to realize, and a lot of self-work to realize, not only was that incorrect, but out of that, I had gone in the opposite direction. It created a tremendous shyness in me as a child. Now, part of that was also fear. If I'm not seen, they can't get to me, was one aspect of it. But then in my interactions with others, and especially in my interactions with women, timid was the operating word. I didn't want to put myself out there because there was no way for me to know where the boundary was. And having been someone who was abused, I didn't know that I even had the right to set boundaries. So I didn't know that these women, the other people in my life, the other people I knew had the right to set boundaries. So I was doing everything I could to not get anywhere near where they might want to set a boundary. Even to the degree of not even talking to them. And yet all of that was just wrong. I'm not going to abuse somebody just because I'm a male. Period. That's one I can look at now and say, no, that's not true. That's not true. And through that awareness, I have been able to shift a lot of those behaviors. I can talk to most people very easily now. I don't have that same level, anywhere near that level of timidity with other people, especially with women. And I don't have nearly the same degree of fear that I had of most men. And again, it was unfounded, but it was based in that particular experience. And that's why I bring it up here, because it's a pretty strong example. So, just one thing that you can do to play with these filters and explore for yourself what they might be, what some of your filters might be. And it's, again, not about getting the right answer, and it's not about clearing away any particular thing, although perhaps you could look at this. If you've got a particular issue in your life, you could ask yourself, well, what are my expectations? What are my beliefs? What are my experiences that have helped shape those beliefs about a particular circumstance? For instance, abundance. That's an exercise that a lot of abundance workshops will work with anyway. You know, what are your experiences with money? What were you told about money? Blah, 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 blah. All of those sorts of things. Now, of course, from a manifestation perspective, what I would say is that those experiences that we have had have been confirmation of the energetic patterns we brought in rather than the creators of those patterns. And that's an important distinction here. Because if we look at all of the patterns that we have as originating in our experiences rather than originating in the choices of the filters that we were taking on, then we're going to have a harder time making change, because we're going to seek to clear away the wounding from those patterns, from the experiences we've had, without getting to the underlying patterns and the built-in expectations that were there before we had the first experience. In other words, I had those patterns already chosen that manifested the molestation. That certainly intensified those patterns. It made them, it grounded them, it made them real, it made them unavoidable, and it made them prominent in my life since then. But it wasn't that up till that time I didn't have those. It was that they were magnified by the experience, because it was the confirmation of the truth of the underlying belief. Even though at that time, I was too young to know I had any beliefs at all, or much in the way of thoughts even. And so, I just offer that out there as a tool that you might find useful to play with sometimes, to help you break things down, to help you find those edges and be able to peer over them and see, you know what, there are other ways to look at this. And I think we all need that sometimes. And often what happens is that the time that we look at that most is when we get confronted with an experience that is not what we desire it to be. And then we have to deal with it. We're forced to deal with it. It creates some kind of a healing crisis or a spiritual crisis or a dark night of the soul or whatever else it creates. But it pushes us to do that. And I am a strong proponent in wellness, spirituality wellness. Doing the spiritual work before we have to get hit with the spiritual 2x4. So that's why I offer this here today. And hopefully it was of service to you. And thank you for helping to co-create it with me. Now, I am going to do another brief commercial announcement. I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to mention it up until it happens. On March 21st, a friend of mine, John Davis, the numerologist, he did one of the earlier shows with me. He analyzed the days, December 21st on the solstice, and March 21st, which is 9 months earlier, which, again, according to the analysis and according to how we look at things as humans with 9 months, from conception to birth, that is the conception date of the energies that will manifest on December 21st. So, what he's calling for on that day is a heightening of prayer to set those intentions in whatever form you might like to do it in, whatever ceremony, etc. I will be sending out an email with more information on this and a particular prayer that might be suggested as at least part of what you might do. But it's about setting aside some time on March 21st to really create a very conscious vision of what we would like the world to open up into. Now, I'm not one of the light switch people where December 21st, poof, magically the whole world has changed when we wake up on December 22nd, like Christmas has happened. But I do believe it's an energetically very significant day. So this resonates with me. If it resonates for you, please join us in that prayer. And now it's time to go see what the other side would like to say to add to today's show. So anyway, just as always, allow your breathing to deepen while I do the toning to bring them in. And we will see. Dear ones, this is Sekhmet, come to be with you today. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And we are here today to give you briefly an exercise that can help you to claim your own light a bit more fully. And you may have done something like this at another time, but if you have, it is time again. So, take a deep breath. And imagine your divinity at the very center of your being. Don't go into the heart at this point. Go to what some might call the Dantian. Around the navel, typically just a little above or just a little below, doesn't matter for the purposes of what we're doing. But what we would like you to do is to connect with the energy of your divinity there as a ball of light. And just breathe into it and feel the pulsing of it. Wonderful. Now, what we would have you do is imagine that you are putting a clear wrapping around that. No matter how big that ball is at this moment, put a wrapping around it. It can be like, clear plastic or glass or even saran wrap if you wish. But it's clear and it completely surrounds it. Good. And now put another layer around that. Again, mostly clear. This might have a little bit of translucence in it. These don't need to be very thick, but just wrap it around there again. But that translucence, if there is some, begins to distort the image of your divinity, of that light down there. All right, now we're going to put another ball around that. Again, basically clear, but a little bit of translucence, and this time the translucence might have a little bit of color in it. Just a bit. Not much, just a bit. But now you have three layers of this, and you have two layers of translucence and a little bit of color that are distorting that image, that energy, that interaction, connection, direction with your divinity. And now wrap another ball around it. And again, basically clear. A little bit translucent, a little bit of color, but a different color than the last time. And now wrap another ball around it. Basically clear, a little translucence, a little bit of color, different than either of the colors before. It's getting harder and harder to see that light at all. And go ahead, let's put one more layer around it. One more layer. Basically clear, a little translucence, a little color. This is the fourth color now. Difficult to see that light at all. Well, we would say to you, dear ones, these layers are real. You did not just put them on there. What you did was you brought your awareness to them. You allowed yourself to perceive them. So what we're going to do, because we are on this side, if you will, rather than on the side inside where the light is fully, said we are going to get a great laser beam. And you might imagine it, if you've ever seen someone do welding. Welding is not just about putting things together, it is about cutting things apart as well. And so what you're going to do, well, first of all, before we start this, let's actually imagine, allow yourself to become aware of as many of the other layers that are layered on top of your divinity as you possibly can. You don't need to count them, you don't need to see them, but just become aware of how many layers there are, of how much distortion there is between your conscious awareness and the light, the full light of your divinity. And we're not saying that you're going to get rid of or cut through all of them here now, but you're going to clear away as much of that distortion as possible in just a moment. And so what we're going to do is we're going to mount that laser on, perhaps the best description would be like the rings around Saturn. If you imagine that outermost layer of distortion, and then that outermost layer is like the outer edge of the atmosphere of Saturn, and then you have the rings around it. So we're putting the laser on the innermost ring of Saturn with the laser pointed in toward the center of the planet. And now we're going to turn that laser on, and it just burns through each layer of the distortion. And now what we're going to do is just spin that ring so that the laser makes a slow circuit all the way around all of these layers of distortion inside of you, inside of your energy field, inside of your physicality, your emotionality, your mentality, inside of every aspect of you. Wherever these layers are, this laser is cutting through them. And it is cutting through in a circle. And it is going all the way around until it comes back to the point that it started. And when it reaches there, it simply turns off and disappears. And now, because these have all been cut, allow yourself to simply imagine them falling away. As if you had cut through the very center of an onion and each layer was falling away individually. And as they fall away, you might even hear them shatter. But they just break up into tinier and tinier pieces until they are gone. And And as you do that, just allow your breathing to deepen. Allow yourself to breathe up more of your divinity. Very nice. Well, enjoy, dear ones. And have a marvelous, marvelous day. Namaste. Okay. Thank you, Sekhmet. Thank you to all of you out there. Doug, you can go ahead and start those chimes whenever you are ready. I cannot do this show without you. I co-create it with you. I thank you for helping to give me the words that I came through to give to you. And, of course, I always appreciate your feedback. Good, bad, or indifferent. Let me know what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'd like to hear down the line. You never know where this show will go. You never know what might come through as inspiration for one of the shows, or when I'm next guided to go into the question pile and pull out the questions that you offer. We'll see if later this month I get a guest in the show before the month ends, but there will be another guest, so send me those as well. And I look forward to being back here again next week. Same time, same station, to go more exploring within the truth within. All right. Hope you have a wonderful week, wonderful rest of your day. Much love, my friends. Namaste.